It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We get tips now on building outdoor holiday light displays. And a shout out to communities that do this on a much grander scale, like Rotary Lights Display at Riverside Park in La Crosse, over 3 million lights. And Chippewa Falls Christmas Village in Irvine Park, over 60,000 lights. Join in on stringing outdoor lights, challenges, your great milestones in doing them. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Andrea Flanagan owns the franchise Your Holiday Lights of Appleton and Oshkosh. Andrea, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, what does your outdoor display look like this year?
This year, I have a two-story home, so we have the roof line lighted, and then I also have garland around our entryway, which has lights on it. I went with multicolor lights this year. And so, yeah, I have two young boys, so we decided to do the color this year.
All right. You mentioned the roof line, and I can just picture that in my head. But before hanging lights, we're going to talk about safety. But how should people plan out and measure for their displays?
The best way, obviously, you can use a wheel. So I measure everything from the ground. You don't have to get up on a ladder to do anything. Walk out that length that you're looking to put on the house. Peaks, I usually measure. So say you've got 10 feet of lights, I multiply that by 1.5 to give you that peak height. I think that's probably the best way to do it from the ground. And then as far as any like bushes or trees, you can also measure that with a wheel. There are some great tools online that you can use to just plug in the dimensions of your bush or tree, and it'll spit out kind of how many feet they roughly think you should use on that bush.
Ooh, we like those calculators. I like those shortcuts for sure. You mentioned multicolor this year. Do you have any suggestions for selecting colors that, might make our displays look better or could be friendlier to people who are your neighbors or who might not have or who have loss of vision?
Sure. I would say our most popular color that we use is warm white. It's always kind of easy on the eyes, not super distracting. Twinkle lights, if you're looking to maybe not be super distracting to your neighbors, maybe stay away from the twinkle lights. But I do think, as long as they're not flashing in a ton, that would look good.
When you're hanging those lights from a roof peak, what is your approach to safety?
We do everything from a ladder, making sure that you have that ladder straight up in the air, not at an angle, having someone foot the ladder at the bottom just to ensure safety, and then not reaching like too far out over the sides when you're putting those up.
And so in terms of how you keep those lights where they should be, especially when you're trying to follow a roof line, do you have any tips on how to hold them in place?
Typically with the roof line lights, what we use is a C7 bulb. So they screw right into the socket that's on our wire. And those have little clips, so you can actually clip in right underneath the soffit. And that's probably the best way to secure it and keep it out of any wind or elements. The other way is there's quite a few different clips. So there's what I call a universal clip, and that can go on your gutter. Otherwise, there are shingle tabs as well, and those just slide right under your first or second shingle. So those are good ways to secure the bigger C7 bulbs. I also know that if you're using mini lights on the roof line, there's mini clips that you can use as well.
Okay, so you have multiple options here. Clipping in under the soffit, you can clip onto a gutter, and even the shingles.
Yep.
Would you recommend one versus the other? Or are there situations when you would want to choose one over the other?
Yeah, there's times where I would recommend using soffit clips, so the ones that are just right on the bulb, just because it's kind of protected then from any weather. Keeping those connections dry is important. And sometimes there's times where you cannot use the soffit clip. Some older homes don't have it. They'll have like a wood kind of decorative soffit up there. Sometimes people have the gutter guards or screens, so you can't use the gutter clips. So that's typically when we go to the shingle tab. So each home's kind of unique, and when we're going out to do estimates, that's something we definitely look at.
Talking with holiday lights, talking with holiday light display expert Andrea Flanagan, who owns a light installation company in Wisconsin. Join in on your holiday lights, what you've encountered, 800-642-1234. Andrea, you mentioned the C type of bulbs. Can you explain some of the differences there between like C7 and C9 bulbs and what this C means?
Sure. The C7 bulb is what we typically use on a roof line. They're your bigger bulb. C9 is an even bigger bulb. So typically you're going to use those on roof lines or like a larger tree, pine tree, when you're wrapping those. And they're the socket wire that we use. Those bulbs are interchangeable, so you could use C7 or C9 on those wires.
And so your smaller bulbs would go down from that, from a C7, or that would mean a smaller bulb?
Yes, so I do. There are like C6, but I would say the most popular for holiday lights is going, and what you'll even see in a store is going to be the C7 or a C9. And then your mini lights are what would come on a typical like 25 or 50 foot strand.
What about your power sources, and what should we bear in mind about making sure that we have adequate power for the lights we're putting up?
You always want to make sure when you're choosing your lights to begin with that they're UL approved. So that just means they've been checked fire safety. It's always important. Another kind of rule that I go by is like the 80-20 rule. So you want to use 80% of your available power on each outlet. So you can get just like an amp meter at a local hardware store, and that will help you determine kind of how much you can use on there. Your lights from the store should have, you know, how much power they're drawing, and then you kind of just have to do the math from there.
All right, do the math from there. What about LED lights? We've heard that they draw a lot less energy. Are they safer to use? Should we go for those instead?
Yes, I would definitely go for those versus the incandescent. They definitely, I think they're a little outdated. You can use more LED lights than you could on the incandescent. And then, I mean, I think LEDs come a long way too. They've our lights, as far as the warm white or any whites, we have a champagne white and then a warm white and a cool white. So the champagne white actually kind of mimics that incandescent that some people really love that color that it gives off.
Wow, so you have multiple options in that classic white look for holiday lights. Let's take a call now. Kelly in Oshkosh. Kelly, hi. What have you encountered with outdoor lights?
Hi. So I have some outdoor lawn sculptures. They are tinsel covered, and they have mini light strings inside of them. And I need to replace the lights. Some of them I need to replace the string, and some of them I just need to replace the bulbs. And I'm wondering if you have any advice for me about that. Can I just buy regular mini lights and replace the strings? And then I have one of them that they have different size sockets, so replacing the little mini light socket is not as straightforward as it might seem. So I'm wondering if you have any words of wisdom for me.
Kelly, thank you. Doing surgery on those outdoor light ornaments there. Andrea, what words of wisdom do you have?
Yeah, I would say probably just replace the mini light strands in there. If it's a lawn ornament, like you said, we use zip ties a lot. So zip ties are like our best friends when we're trying to secure things. It might be a good way to keep that pattern on your lawn ornament, follow that, and just zip tie them in. You might not even have to take the old lights off.
Okay. Kelly, does that help?
I think so, yeah.
Well, thank you for calling in.
Thank you.
Yes, we're getting tips on holiday lights, hanging outdoor holiday lights. Andrea Flanagan, been in the business in the Fox Valley. Call in with your light display issues, your questions, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As we talk about hanging lights outdoors, steps to show off a festive look on your home or apartment, call in with your light display questions and issues, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We have Andrea Flanagan, who owns a light display franchise and stays with us. Andrea, let's continue on talking about troubleshooting. When a light strand fails to turn on, what could be the problem? What's the issue?
Yeah, if you're looking at mini lights that are going out, there is a fuse kind of on one of those ends, the male or female end, that you could always replace. I know on some of the mini lights, they have little replacement bulbs that will come with it as well. I've seen in store little like mini light gun replacement that are easy to just kind of pop in and off. So that's where I would start if one of your strands is out. As far as like the whole display in itself, just making sure that you're not drawing too much power. It's typically not an issue with the LED lights. So that's where I would definitely test using like an amp meter to make sure you're not drawing too much.
So there is a product that helps people find broken bulbs in the light strand. It's called the Light Keeper. It can be found typically where holiday lights are sold. How does this tool work?
I'm not super familiar with that tool.
Okay.
I would say, yeah, I mean, if you're looking for, usually they turn off like in sections too. So where the lights are shutting off there, maybe just look for like a break in the wire. Like squirrels, rabbits, they love holiday light wires. There's like a coating on there that they're attracted to. So it never fails. We'll get a couple calls every year like, hey, our lights aren't working, especially in trees. So we come out, take a look, and you'll see it's just kind of like straight cut through the wire.
Sure enough, it's our friends up in the trees. You had an issue recently at the Oshkosh holiday parade with lights going on and off. What happened there?
Yeah, so we did a float in the Oshkosh holiday parade. We used a lot of sprinkle lights, and we had tested everything at the shop. We had it plugged into the truck. It was under like 400 watts we were using. It just kept shutting off after a while. And we finally figured out that the twinkle lights were, it's kind of like when they surge on and off, drawing too much power. So we had to cut out a few of those lights. So twinkle lights can be an issue going, if you know at the initial startup, you're not drawing too much power. It may be that twinkling effect causing it to surge and draw too much power at once and shutting them off.
I've always wondered how you sync those twinkle lights with music and how that integration of that works.
Yeah, I think there's a few different products out there that you can buy and plug them into your lights. I think most of them work with any LED lights. There's a product that you can plug in kind of like at the start of your lights that will do that. But yeah, there's some really big light displays where you can tune into the radio, and I'm not sure how those work. We don't do those.
I love those so much. Can LED lights that are new and different and that have been added to, let's say, the box of lights, can they be attached to my old incandescent strings?
I would probably stick with one or the other.
Okay.
Especially even just like aesthetically, the look of them is very different. So I would stick with your LEDs. That way you know exactly how much you're drawing to.
All right. And how many strings, like, of LED lights can I connect end to end? Or does that really vary with the power source?
Yeah, it does vary. I would say even by, like, the brand that you're buying. So I would always check the box they should have on there, what you should be, you know, the run of lights that you can connect. And then a lot of those mini light ends have a male side that you can, like, plug in another male to that side as well. And those, you don't want to go more than like five stacked on each other. So if you're wrapping like a tree, don't run more than five of those together. But if you're going a male to a female, that one you can run for quite a bit. The box should say on there kind of what they expect.
Talking with light expert Andrea Flanagan, you can join in 800-642-1234. Travis in Waukesha. Travis, hi. What's your tip?
How's it going? So, yeah, I was listening to what you guys are saying. I actually use smart switches, the things that you can use to, like, turn on lamps, you know, with, like, your Google Home or your, you know, Amazon Alexa or, you know, stuff like that. And inside of there, you can actually set up, like, routines. And, like, I have one that says turn the lights on, you know, 15 minutes before dusk and, you know, at a certain time rather than just using a timer so that you're able to use that, you know, as the time changes of dusk, you're not actually turning your lights on, you know, half an hour to an hour early. It changes depending on when sunrise is that day.
Wow, that is such a fantastic tip. Oh, Travis, thank you for that. Andrea, what do you think of that, using your smart speaker in such a smart way with a new iteration of timers?
Yeah, that's really cool. I think things have come a long way, being able to do things from your phone, definitely convenient. And timers, you know, that's light sensor. We typically use like a dusk to dawn setting, or you can do that 4, 6, 8 hour timer after dark. So, and I think that's always nice for your neighbors too, so you can shut them off and not have them on all night.
What are your recommendations for, say, decorating a bush with lights and making sure that it stands out, but you're not, you know, putting too many lights on one area?
Yeah, the way I string our lights on bushes is we space them out about 6 inches apart from each other. And we go front to back. So we'll start at the back of the bush, wrap to the front, kind of do like a U shape down the front, and then come to the back. That's just kind of spaces out the lighting without making it and give it more of a random look than just like a line of lights.
And what is the proper way to protect outdoor lighting from rain and snow?
Yeah, we use, there's connections that you can buy at a local hardware store. If you've got extension cords that you need to run through the yard, I suggest kind of encapsulating those, making sure that no moisture gets in there. And then for mini light connections, making sure that male end is pointed up. If you have the female end pointed up, water will kind of run into there and can sit in there and cause a short.
Do you have any suggestions for people who want to dispose of their holiday lights? How do they get rid of them?
Yeah, actually, each, I would say, state or local authority has different rules on that. I know here in Oshkosh, you can just throw them in the garbage, but you might want to just check with your state or local authority. I think it was just on like the sanitation page as to what to do with them.
Okay, so double check where you live. And how should people approach storing their holiday lights? What's the best way?
The way we do it is we store them in plastic totes. So at the end of the year, when we go to take them down, I'll put it in the tote and then we kind of let it dry out for a day or two. And then once it's done, we will put the lid on, store that away. I would say too, like, just taking your lights down, wrapping them up. We usually do for mini lights, we'll take the female end, you kind of wrap it into like a ball, And that way, when you go to take it out, they're not all like connected and tangled. And then you can just easily check, have that male end out, plug it into the wall, see if it works. And if it doesn't, you know, you can throw it out, try to repair it.
Go to the next step. Andrea, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, of course.
Andrea Flanagan is owner of the franchise Your Holiday Lights of Appleton and Oshkosh. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Certified B Corp businesses, they are legally obligated to more than shareholders, but to the environment as well and to community. And around the nation, B Corps are expanding, including here in Wisconsin. Join our conversation about these benefit corporations, 800-642-1234. Jan van den Kieboom is founder of Workshop Architects in Milwaukee. Jan, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. It's great to join you this morning.
Good morning. We also have Scott Anderson, co-founder of Stakeholder Stewardship Artisan Dental in Madison. Scott, welcome to you.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Great. And also Lisa Giesenbauer, president of Evolution Marketing in the Village of Neshota, chairs the Be Local Wisconsin group. Lisa, thanks for being here. Welcome. Lisa, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Hi,
you hear
Lisa.
Me?
Yes, yes, we can. Let's start with you, Lisa. How does your marketing firm incorporate social responsibility into the business model?
Sure. Evolution Marketing just actually turned 15 in September. And what we did is when we founded the business 15 years ago, we decided that we wanted to be run in a triple bottom line manner, which means that we run all of our business decisions through three lenses. That of the impacts on people, so the community, our workforce, our subcontractors, our partners, planet, so the environment. And then the last one is economic viability. Are the decisions we're making going to actually advance the business and help the business to be a force for good in the world? So we did that before the B Corp movement existed, and we've been operating that way for the last 15 years.
What do your clients say, the people who want your marketing expertise? Do they align with your mission?
Yes, they do. And I should say, we're a sustainability consultancy first, and then marketing communication second. So that means we only work in the intersectional space of holistic sustainability and then marketing communications for that holistic sustainability. So our clients who are nonprofits and our sustainability practitioners and our businesses who have a really cool new innovative sustainability product, they love that we're a B Corp, and actually we attract more clients because we're a B Corp.
Scott Anderson, how does your dental office meet the criteria of a B Corp?
Well, similar to your introductory speaker's discussion, we need to take a comprehensive approach in terms of earning at least 80 points on the B impact assessment out of a total of 160 points. And we can earn points across five different subcategories. The first is governance. The second is customers. The third is workers or our team members. The fourth is the community. And the fifth is the environment. So as an organization, we've actually earned points across all of those different categories. But to give you an example, in the environmental category, we recently became the first carbon neutral dental practice in the United States. And that helps us in terms of a goal, manage our overall energy usage and help us understand what are our carbon impacts up through our supply chain, for example, what are the impacts in terms of employee commutes into the office. So that's one example in the environmental category.
How big of a challenge was it for you to get the dental practice to become carbon neutral? What were some of the barriers?
Yeah, I think the biggest challenge was in order to become carbon neutral, a company needs to assess their what's called the scope 1, 2, and 3 greenhouse gases. And so we didn't have that expertise within our organization. So we went out and hired a consultancy called Carbon Credit Capital in New York. And they have very sophisticated software that, for example, can take a gauze pad, which we use frequently in our office, and they can assess what is the carbon footprint of that gauze pad through its manufacturing and even its shipping to our organization. So they were able to help us assess our carbon footprint and then also offset that with carbon credits. Mm-hmm. So I think that was the biggest challenge, but overall, it was a very straightforward process in that, in our case, we were able to reduce our total carbon footprint by about 84% just by moving to renewable energy purchases from Madison Gas and Electric.
Oh, that's interesting. Let's turn now to Jan Vandenkiboom. You are new to the B Corp certification with the architecture practice. What surprised you about getting a B Corp certification?
Well, this was our 26th year in business and our second year as a B Corp. So the B Corp really became a way for us to clarify our values as a company and make sure that we were living into them as fully as we can. I think as an architecture firm, we have an opportunity to have a really significant impact on the built environment and energy uses and carbon impact. But the belonging to the B Corp community has allowed us to hold ourselves even more accountable and make sure that we are not taking shortcuts and looking for opportunities for impact, both environmental and social impact, throughout the different phases of the work that we do.
I would imagine this type of ethic has been running through the firm for a long time, perhaps since its origin. Did anything really change, though, when you became a B Corp?
That's a great question, Kate. Our architecture firm is a little bit unique in that we've really focused on how physical environments impact community and the creation of community, and have been very focused on inclusion, what we call inclusion placemaking, or how can physical environments make marginalized individuals feel engaged and feel ownership of the space. So the B Corp has been more of a way for us to talk about our values and how we work and make it understandable to people. Rather, it hasn't defined how we work as much as helps explain it, if mm-hmm. that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like a vehicle for your values, if you will.
Yes, absolutely. Although this is our second year, so we're learned just in the early phases of learning what does it mean to be part of this community. And it's been really fun to connect with other designers that are going down this path. I had a chance to meet with the owner of a B Corp architecture firm in Seattle recently, and we shared stories about why they did it and how it's been impacting their practice. And it's given us a lot of ideas on how we can grow into the B Corp world even more.
We're talking with three business owners that are certified B Corps here in Wisconsin. Jan Vandenkiboom owns an architectural firm in Milwaukee. Scott Anderson, co-founder of a dental office in Madison. And Lisa Giesenbauer, president of a marketing firm and part of the, or leads the B Corp group here in Wisconsin. Lisa, you see a B Corp certification that differently from other types of business labels or sustainability certification. What does B Corp, why does it stand apart?
Okay. And yes, I do totally see being a certified B Corp as being very different than the myriad of sustainability certifications that exist. Currently, there's over 2,500 different types of sustainability certifications.
Wow.
So it could be, yeah, right. Isn't that crazy? I mean, it's intense, right? So it could be for a product. It could be for a process. It could be for an operation. It could be for your building. So there's all these different things. But there are very few that are actually holistically for the whole business. So I love the B Corp certification, and we've been a B Corp for 5 years. We just finished our second recertification, and to me, it's really important because it looks at holistically your whole operation. So every single thing that you're doing in that business, from the high school kids that I work with at Oconomowoc High School every year, all the way to the purchasing policies and decisions that I put in place at Evolution Marketing, all of those are on the table when you go through the certification process.
Hmm. Scott, the assessment for getting a B Corp certification is rigorous and has become more, I understand, more rigorous over time. Do you think, is this certification for all businesses?
I think it's for all businesses in that the B Impact assessment is a free tool that's available to all businesses around the world. To begin to measure this holistic impact. In terms of the rigor of the assessment, it's been described by Inc. magazine as the most rigorous global standard for a socially responsible business. So I think depending upon where a business is at in their overall sustainability or business for good journey, it may be a good match. But I think for other businesses, it may be more challenging in terms of the rigor.
Lisa, how interested are Wisconsin businesses in this certification?
Well, I think many Wisconsin businesses are super interested. I just don't know, to go back to Scott's point, if they're ready for it. Everybody, I truly believe most businesses really want to be a force for good in the world, and they want to do good by the environment and by social metrics. I think that a lot of people haven't, they'll put their practices down on paper and they haven't started tracking, measuring, and monitoring what they're doing. So because of that, when you look at the B Impact assessment, you might feel overwhelmed because for every answer, every response you put in, you would need to have documentation that backs up what you're doing. So there's another program in Wisconsin. Can I talk a little bit about that, that people could do if they're beginning the phase?
Sure.
This training? There's a program through the Wisconsin Sustainable Business Council. It's called the Green Masters Program. And I like to say it's an on-ramp into the sustainability certifications for businesses. It's not third-party audited like the B Impact assessment, but it does provide a really nice internal assessment you can do yourself. And by doing that, you can then start to see what actions you can take as you're making strategic plans for the future of your organization. And that program, again, if you go to wisconsinsustainability.com, the program's listed online, and both Scott's business, Artisan Dental, and Evolution Marketing have both been part of that program for a really long time as well. And I think it's a great way to start. And then once you've done that program for a couple of years and hit a high score, then you can apply to become a certified B Corp because you're in the mindset of tracking every single action you're doing and managing and monitoring it and documenting it.
We have three certified B Corp companies from Wisconsin as we talk about the on-ramp to socially responsible business practices and what it means to be a B Corp. Lisa Giesenbauer there leads a Neshota marketing firm. Scott Anderson with us, co-founder of a Madison dental practice. And Jan Vanden Kieboom is behind a Milwaukee architecture firm. You can join in on B Corp's 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We focus on certified B Corps and the group B Local Wisconsin banding together to show a strong commitment toward being good corporate citizens. Still time to talk about the future of B Corps, 800-642-1234. We have Lisa Giesenbauer, who chairs the B Local Wisconsin Group, runs a marketing agency with the certification. Scott Anderson co-founded a Madison dental practice as a B Corp. And Jan Vandenkieboom founded a Milwaukee architecture firm, now with this seal, and they stay with us. Let's bring on a call. Steve is here from Oshkosh. Steve, what would you like to bring up?
Hi. In the last International Climate Change Conference, COP26, which is with the United Nations, one of the primary subjects of the conference was accounting, basically like green accounting for the international financial system. And this effort is led by Mark Carney, the author of a book called Values, and he was the central banker for both England and Canada. And I'm just wondering if the B Corporation, I don't know what to call it, that model, is that involved in this effort, this international effort?
Lisa, is our B Corps bound or following what we see from the Glasgow Climate Pact, from the UN Climate Change Conference?
Okay, that's a wonderful question. So thank you so much, Steve, for calling in. So in the B Corp world, we have what are called working groups. And one of those working groups is called the B Corp Climate Collective. And I'm really proud that my company is one of those. And before COP25, we actually, when I say we, the folks in the B Corp Climate Collective, there were over 500 of us, signed a letter that was actually read aloud at COP25, so before COP26, the one 2 years before that, where we all pledged to be net zero by 2030. So for the B Corp Climate Collective businesses, which my company has signed on to, we were the first in Wisconsin, I'm pretty sure Scott's company has also signed on as well. We're all working towards being net zero by 2030. My business currently is already carbon neutral as well, and there's a large movement. I want to say at the last Climate Collective call we had that we have, I want to say it's 2,000 to 3,000, about half maybe, of the B Corps have already signed on to that, and they're working towards it. The B Corp movement is very much looking at how our business is addressing climate and carbon in their day-to-day operations. And remember when Scott was talking about scopes 1, 2, and 3, that's something that question is actually asked in the B Impact Assessment. So B Labs, U.S. and Canada, want to know what actions we're all taking to address climate and carbon. And in the future, I don't know what year this is going to come out. There's been discussion, it'll be 2024, but in the next iteration of the B Impact Assessment, there's going to be an area, there's going to be 10 areas that if your business is not meeting these rigorous standards in these 10 areas, you can't certify as a B Corp. So this is all stuff that's coming out in the future. And one of those areas is carbon management and climate.
Scott Anderson, what would you like to add here about, the climate change, what comes out of the UN Climate Change Conference?
I would defer to Lisa's expertise in this arena. So in that I'm not as well versed in terms of what those international bodies are doing. So perhaps, Lisa, you could add some additional color.
And then, Scott, you are also part of the conscious capitalism movement, though. Can you explain how that is working with your B Corp status?
Sure. We've been strongly influenced by the ideas of conscious capitalism, which are very similar to those of the B Corp movement in terms of emphasizing creating multiple forms of benefit for all stakeholders involved. And I think about conscious capitalism, certified B Corps, organic certifications, fair trade producers, as all part of the larger business for good movement. So these are all sub-movements that represent people really trying to use their businesses to create more goodness, more truth, and more beauty in the world. And so fortunately, this movement is very diverse. It's global in scope. And so for those reasons, I'm very, very optimistic in terms of how economies can evolve with these kind of grassroots engines of change at the company level.
Yeah, and as you talked about your architecture firm working with clients, universities, businesses around the nation, and the sustainability of your product depends on your clients' needs at the end of the day. So how do you work with clients to ensure the product meets the social responsibility rigors of the B Corp standards?
There's really two different areas. There's the how the spaces that we create impact social, the social impact on the people who.
I think we're losing you there. Are you still with us, Jan? I think
in terms of measuring people's sense of belonging. Oh, go ahead, Kate.
We lost you there for just a moment. Can you just say again what you said? I hope that the line will hold here.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. So there's in our practice, there's really two different areas. One has to do with the environmental impact of the buildings that we construct, both in the carbon usage in its construction, and the materials, as well as ongoing operations. And that's pretty easy to measure. We have tools and methodologies to really keep track and to know how well we're doing in those regards. Much more difficult is to measure the impact that these places have on people's well-being. And we've been working on developing tools to measure how well the environments and spaces are impacting people's, and in many cases, because we work a lot with universities, students' mm-hmm. lives and their sense of belonging. And that's one thing that really appealed to us about the B Corp movement, is the focus on measuring impact. Not just saying you want to do something good, but having to demonstrate that what you're doing is real and that it has impact.
Walking the walk. Well, thank you all for joining us. Jan Vandenkieboom there, founder of Workshop Architects in Milwaukee. Scott Anderson, co-founder of Stakeholder Stewardship Artisan Dental in Madison. And Lisa Giesenbauer, president of Evolution Marketing in Neshota and chairs the B Local Wisconsin Group. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.